Welcome to the Chrome Cast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. This week, we talk through some of the new features for Chrome OS, some new detachable devices, and some great Black Friday deals, and so much more. Hope you enjoy. So one thing that we've always wanted from Chrome OS is virtual desktops, or the ability to have kind of multiple desktops within your setup. So tell me a little bit about this multi-monitor window switching shortcut that we've learned about, and kind of what it, you know, how people could use that.
Yeah, it's more of a productivity tool, obviously. Robbie and I talk a lot about the little tweaks and minor finishing touches that they're putting on Chrome OS that make it feel just more well-rounded. And it's simply a keyboard shortcut that will move your desktop in between extended monitors. It's in the Canary channel right now, and it's one of our latest articles. You can read about it. There's four different keyboard combinations, and it'll switch to the right or left in whatever direction you choose. And again, a lot of people have said that it's not really that big of a deal because you can just drag and drop your windows into the extended monitor. But from a workflow perspective, it's very, very useful to be able to just throw things wherever you need them. And kind of premonition of virtual desktops, which is something that we've wanted for a long, long time. And I think we were actually discussing that at the office earlier today. That's something I know Robbie has talked about for a long time, that you do get with other operating systems that Chrome OS really, really could take advantage of if they would do that. So.
Yeah, and to speak back to this shortcut, it is a simple thing, and it's a small thing, sure, but in general, it's something that it's just one of those awkward movements, right? So if you're going to drag a window to another display, you just got to get it just right most of the time, unless your display is the exact same resolution as the display you're coming from, which isn't normal. And so there's these areas where it may not quite move over, or you unclick the mouse like halfway between and it's stuck in no man's land. So, I mean, to be able to just quickly throw a window to another display, I think it'll be something I'll use regularly. And then to talk about the idea of virtual desktops, Mac OS does this probably the best. I mean, Windows has come a long way in making their setup actually do this really well too. So four-finger swipes, you can set up a whole separate desktop. So it's virtually like having a monitor next to your monitor, and you can just swing over to it. For most applications, it's as quick, if not quicker, than actually looking over to another monitor. And so when I use those devices, that is something I envy big time, because it's just handy. It's a great productivity tool. And so we're hoping and feel pretty confident that at some point in time in the future, we're going to see this on Chrome OS, because honestly, every Linux desktop has this UI element. So all of them have this, and ultimately Chrome OS is a Linux distro in one way, shape, or form. And so we're hoping to see that, because it makes using a smaller device, maybe even like the Pixelbook, something at 12.3 inches, feel much bigger if you have these virtual desktops kind of floating out there that you can move between. So hopefully that's something we'll see in the near future.
Right. Especially with Google's recent focus on the enterprise sector, they've really pushed to start capturing a market in larger corporations and things. And you have companies that have utilized Linux, Windows, Mac OS, whatever the case may be, and productivity is key. So I think the priority for it now is higher than it was three or four years ago when Chrome OS was still just a fledgling operating system.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I like your point of it's just those little finishing touches, right? So it's just finding those little things that people are asking for, that they're wanting to develop. So it's great stuff that they're working on. Kind of switching gears here, Samsung has some detachables coming, or so we've heard.
Yeah, and I'll let Gabe speak to that first. He found this commit. So
yeah, this was one of those really exciting things for me, because we last year when the Samsung Chromebook Pro and Plus leaked, we've been trying to piece together who's making some of these devices that we track in the repositories, and For the most part, they keep themselves pretty hidden. The manufacturers all have, most of them have emails that kind of mask what company they work for, or they're a third-party manufacturer making for a bigger name, and you just never really know who it is until the device is released. But Samsung is one of the few exceptions. Once the Pro and Plus were leaked and then eventually launched, we were able to connect Samsung emails with those devices. And a couple of days ago, actually stumbled across this new detachable, codename on it's Nautilus, and one of the same employees from Samsung's name is on it. That is also on the Pro and Plus. So we're pretty, well, more than pretty. I'm almost positive that the detachable that's coming in the near future will be branded Samsung.
So. Yeah, in general, this guy doesn't get involved in anything unless it's, obviously he's got an @Samsung email address, but he doesn't get involved in stuff that's not Samsung made.
Right.
And we even saw him on the Chromebook 3 too as well, and all the way back into the Chromebook 2. So, I mean, he's been on multiple Samsung Chromebooks. And only Samsung Chromebooks.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a pretty clear sign that this guy is not only involved, but that Samsung is going to be the maker for this device. So there's a couple thoughts around what it could be like. We don't have anywhere near enough details to be able to pin this stuff down. But, Samsung has made some detachable-type devices. Mostly, though, I think their tablet-type stuff or their detachable-type stuff falls more into the iPad Pro setup. So that you have a tablet first that has some pogo pins, and it drops into some sort of case that serves as a keyboard. Now, I've used the 10-inch version. What is it called?
The Galaxy Book.
Galaxy Book, yeah.
I have a 10.6 and a 12-inch.
Yeah, and I think I used the 12-inch one. And the tablet was phenomenal, like crazy thin and light and AMOLED screen and just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The case looks really good, and it comes with it, and it's got a decent keyboard and trackpad stuff on it, but like the way it folded up and the way it dealt with the device, it was just flimsy and kind of awkward, and it was honestly enough to be so off-putting that it wasn't a device I wanted to mess with any longer. Granted, it ran Windows, so that also was off-putting a little bit, but in general, the hardware was so attractive, and it looked like something that would just be really, really interesting, and the case part of it broke down a little bit for me personally, but I don't know. Different people are going to use different things, and so as we start seeing other detachables, Chrome OS tablets come out, as we see this operating system become more at home in the tablet mode, it's still got work to do, and we've talked about that before, but as we see it kind of find its home there and be more comfortable to use in that way, then who knows? Something with maybe a somewhat flimsy or crappy keyboard, that's not that big of a deal anymore. Hey, I'm going to use this as a tablet 80% of the time, and when I need to slap a keyboard on, I will. It's awesome that we're seeing tons of different devices that fit different use cases, and not everything's the perfect thing for everybody.
Yeah, right. And so, those are some cool things coming, but we've got some great devices out right now that are going to be going on sale soon. So as we are recording this podcast now, it's Thanksgiving week, which means Black Friday is coming, right? So what devices are coming out, and what's the best deals that we've dug up on the interwebs?
Yeah, well, the best deal is the one that you can get, but it's just like the last few Black Fridays. Black Fridays become more of a week or month-long event, and we've been seeing sales for since the beginning of the month. But the biggest one that I think is probably going to be the best one of the year is Samsung started yesterday, $100 off the Plus or Pro. So you can get the Samsung Chromebook Plus for $349 right now. And
which is a steal.
That's a steal. Yeah. And
$400.
Yeah, $449. We've said it a million times. The Samsung Chromebook Pro should be a $500 device, and now you can get it for $449. And that's Samsung and Amazon, same price. We'll have links in the show notes for that. But that's probably the best deal around. And then if Asus is your thing, almost every newer model of Asus Chromebook is on sale right now. It's not huge savings, but it's significant savings, anywhere from $30 to $60, depending on which device you're looking at. So.
Yeah, and stating a bunch of prices here probably isn't even worthwhile. You know, you need to, if you're listening to this and you're not a subscriber to the site, you probably should subscribe, and especially for the next couple of weeks as these deals roll in. We try to keep our eyes on the big ones, the ones that are seemingly really important. And so keep up with it. Subscribe to the channel. Subscribe to the website, you know, YouTube, all that kind of stuff, so that you can kind of stay informed on some of this stuff. Because who knows, 2 days after this podcast goes up, we could see, you know, $50 or $100 off an Asus C302 from Amazon.
Yeah, randomly. Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
It fluctuates literally by the hour, it seems like. And so, definitely subscribe.
Yeah, just to make it easy, I don't think there's a link at the top of our page, but if you just go to chromeunbox.com/deals, that will bring up any deals that we've published, so you can keep track of those easily.
Yeah, one interesting note I do want to add is that with the $100 off on both Samsung devices, as Gabriel pointed out, it gets the Pro under $500 substantially, so $450, but it gets the Plus into that $350 range. And what we're already seeing, if you all don't know this, I mean, we're upfront about this, we are Amazon affiliates. We sell stuff via Amazon. We have seen tons of Pluses sell in the last couple days, or in the last day since that sale went live. And so if manufacturers, on the happenstance that someone's listening, or you want to share this stuff on Twitter and say, hey, you know, that look at how your sales are doing at these price points. These devices, I think these are comfortable price points for these devices. I don't know what their margins look like, but man, at $350 for the Plus, I mean, it is going really, really bonkers.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Yeah.
And it just shows that they've been priced a little bit high for what they are. And
right.
You get them into this price point, man, and they're just moving really,
well,
really quickly.
And we, Robbie and I have talked about this. You know, you get, when you get into that 350 range for the Plus, it becomes that, oh, well, you know, I wasn't exactly thinking about getting this gift for, you know, someone in the family, but at that price, you
right.
know, I'm like,
right.
you know, my mom, for instance, is looking for a new laptop of some sort, and so me and my brothers are going to chip in and get her that device, you know, because at that price point, it just makes sense. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are probably in that same boat of, hey, it was maybe a little, just barely too expensive, so much so that they were writing it off, but then just dropping it down that $100 is making it a really attractive device for a lot of people.
Definitely.
So that's cool to see. Hopefully there will be a lot of folks getting these devices for the holidays, which is always exciting. We've got a Core i7 Pixelbook. As if this device wasn't good enough already, we've got a Core i7 now. What's the deal? What is this thing?
So
is it just a beast of a Chromebook? They
yeah,
just they just
exactly.
wanted to make a Chromebook that was just as awesome as possible.
Yeah, they announced this, and it was on the spec sheet and has been on the spec sheet since the Pixelbook launched, that there would be upcoming a Core i7, 16 gigs of RAM, and half a terabyte of NVMe SSD storage. So. Yeah, as if the original i5, 8 gig, and 128 or 256 wasn't enough. I mean, this thing is just bonkers. I'm really unsure. We've talked about this last week, you know, a little bit about the Pixelbook and just, you know, the price being a bit confounding, you know, and it being hard to place and say, hey, this person should buy it. Like, I have one, but I'm not the general consumer, right? And so really thinking through, like, who is this device for and who's it best for? I really don't know who's
not
gonna...
Not sure about that
yet. Like, I'm not gonna buy a Core i7 half terabyte, 16 gig of RAM Chromebook.
Right.
Like, at this point, right? Like, why would I do that? Like, the Pixelbook I have is the entry-level model for $1,000. This one we're talking about is, what, $1,650?
Yeah.
You know? Like, why would I buy this thing? It wouldn't even be neat, because you wouldn't even be able to tell the performance gains over the current one, the entry level model. So I don't get it, unless there's something more,
right?
And if there's something more down the road coming that Google knows, and they're preparing this device so that they can meet some of those needs. I just, man, cool, but I don't get it at all.
Yeah, and we've kicked around a lot of different ideas, and you know, Google's official stance at the launch was the storage is because you've got your Netflix movies and all your music and everything. But seriously, I don't need a Core i7 device with half a terabyte of lightning fast storage to watch my Netflix movies. But you know, we've talked about developers and Android Studio and containers and headless apps and all kinds of things. And from a developer standpoint, that's probably the device I would want.
Well, sure.
We just don't know. We don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know what Google's up to. But
yeah.
Either way, whether you need it or not, or you just have $1,700 around you want to spend, we've actually seen a couple sites that have the i7 up for pre-order. Google does not yet. Last week, BH Photo out of New York had it up for pre-order. They did not have a shipping date listed, but you could. They would gladly go ahead and take your money and reserve you one. Since then, it has been reverted back to notify me when it's ready. But then Fry's Electronics, which Robbie wrote about having an actual release date of December 7th, now has it up for pre-order. So you can go to friesElectronics.com and reserve yours if you want. And according to their site, they'll start shipping on December 7th. So
yeah, so take that with a grain of salt.
Who knows?
They can put those dates on there if they want to, but usually those dates come from somewhere. They don't just pull them out of nowhere. So there's a good chance that, you know, December 7th is when this thing is going to become available. And I don't think you have to, you know, trip over yourself to get the pre-order.
Yeah.
I seriously doubt there's going to be a ton of people lining up to buy it. But who knows?
Yeah, maybe do yourself a favor and do what everybody else does. Go to the Google store and click on the i7 model and join the wait list. As soon as it's available to order, you'll get an email. I mean, simple way. We'll let you know, too.
So if you have been keeping up with our YouTube channel, you would have seen that we put out a short little video on some new split-screen functionality in tablet mode for Chromebooks. So for those that maybe didn't see the video, give us a quick recap of what it does, how it might be useful for folks.
Yeah, so it showed up in a couple different places. Apparently now some people are saying it's showing up in beta for them. It's hidden behind a flag.
Yeah.
I think there were a handful of people said, hey, I've got it. I'm seeing this in beta. So it's definitely moving through the channels right now. If you're listening to this, you don't know what channels are. Basically, there's development channels. So there's developer channel, which is kind of unstable. You can switch your Chromebook to beta channel, which is way more stable than developer channel, but you may be able to beta test some new features. And then you have stable channel, which is what everybody gets out of the box. So it looks like it's actually starting to push towards beta channel right now. And basically what we're looking at is an implementation of split screen apps the way that Windows 10 handles it. And so, you know, Microsoft isn't all evil and Microsoft isn't all, you know, bumbling and failing in all sorts like sometimes we tend to think of them and people, you know, rag on Windows. Windows 10 really does split screen apps in tablet mode really, really, really well. They're the ones that actually implemented it first, and iOS took from that. And so the way iOS handles, the way Android now handles split screen apps is all based on the way they actually did it in Windows 8. And so they've been kind of perfecting and working on it. And so in a similar fashion, what you'll be able to do basically on your Chromebook is when you're in tablet mode, you'll hit that overview mode that's in the bottom right corner to where you can see all your open apps. You just grab whatever one you want, pull it to one side, grab the other one, pull it to the other side, and boom, you have split screen apps. And you can drag the bar in the center to resize between them. A couple caveats at this point right now, again, it's in development, so it's not ready yet. Android apps in general, not just on Chromebooks, don't all possess the ability to resize. And so if it doesn't resize, clearly it's not going to work well in a split screen scenario. Even if you weren't able to resize it on the fly, and once you try to squish it into a split screen, it's got to reform itself to fit over there to begin with. And so it actually works in portrait and in landscape mode. So if you turn it up in into portrait mode, you actually drag the bar from top to bottom. And so it's not a huge, like, oh my God, this changes everything. But in tablet mode right now, you're stuck to one app at a time. And you can switch between them pretty easily and you can move between them pretty easily. But it feels a little clunky if you ever needed to do two things at once while you kind of have a tablet in your hand or a Chromebook in tablet mode in your hand. But the big reason it needs to come along and needs to become a feature is because, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, We have detachables and we have tablets on the horizon. And so when those come and you don't have desktop mode until you click some sort of base on, and for right now, we don't have the option to just tell it to be in laptop mode. Being able to only run one thing at a time is kind of frustrating. And so that's definitely a feature that needs to come along, and it needs to grow up pretty quick. Like I said, other devices do it way, way better than what we're seeing so far. Hopefully Chrome OS can kind of come along and be good at that pretty quickly.
Yeah. So one other thing that we've been seeing out there is some voice experiments on Google Home. So, you know, tell me a little bit about this. What exactly are voice experiments?
Well, you played with them a lot more than I did, Robbie, but it's part assistant, part home. You can do some of them on the home. You can do some of them on the assistant on your phone, but it builds on the Google experiments that they've been working on for quite some time. They have a full page dedicated to those. But the voice experiments are literally interactive voice games and projects and things that you can do via the Google Assistant. I had done one on my phone called Mystery Animal, I think is what it is. And it's just a fun little experiment. You ask the assistant questions, yes or no questions, and based on those questions, I mean, it's essentially 20 questions with the Google Assistant. And it's a fun little game, but Robbie was actually able to experiment with a few of those with the kids, didn't you?
Yeah. So we played quite a few rounds of Mystery Animal, which is fun. Again, it's 20 questions.
This is all through the home, right? So if you've got a home or a home mini.
Sure. You can pull this up, and you basically, if you go to the website, our website, you can see there's a story about it. But it's also experiments.withgoogle.com/voice. And so basically in it, I think like with Mystery Animal, for instance, I think you say something like that. Yeah. So, you know, you would say, hey, and I'm not going to say it because I don't want to set off anybody's Google. Hey, G, talk to Mystery Animal, and it'll bring the Mystery Animal, you know, application or whatever you want to call it up. And you actually kind of have communication with it, and it's a little sassy. It's kind of fun to deal with. It's not just a robotic kind of thing, so that's pretty cool. The other one that I had a lot of fun with, and it's not great. These are experiments, so they're gonna have failings. But Meme Buddy. Now you're gonna have a ton of fun just trying to get it to bring up, because you have to say talk to Meme Buddy, and you have to say it like that, because if you say talk to me buddy, it says, hey, I'm here to talk whenever you like. And it wants to talk to you. I'm just like, no, meme buddy.
Talk to
meme buddy. And literally, if somebody would have like recorded me the first time, I had to say it like 8 times before they should probably change the name of the thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Once you get it working, like you tell it, like, make me a meme of a dog saying, you know, what's up, dog? You know, and it'll create the meme for you, and you can share it right there. You know, and again, this one is one that's going to work better. You can do it with Google Home, and I think it'll send it maybe to a Chromecast or something for you to look at. But you can do all of these on your phone as well, or obviously you can do it on a Chromebook. So you could, once the other Chromebooks get Google Assistant, you can do it on any Chromebook.
Right.
For right now with the Pixelbook, you know, you bring up your assistant and go at it. You know, I want to play Mystery Animal, or I want to, you know, make me a meme of whatever, you know, and it's honestly kind of fun to see what it comes up with. And really what these experiments are for is to showcase, hey, look, voice assistants are going to be able to do more than you consider right now. Like most of us right now, most of you listening to this right now are probably thinking, okay, you know, voice assistant, open an app. Hey, G, you know, remind me to pick up my dry cleaning, you know, that kind of stuff. Set a timer, alarm, or whatever. You know, these little commands that we expect of voice assistants, and that's fine. It's going to continue getting better at doing those types of things, answering trivia, which is what Google Assistant's best at right now. But eventually, you know, we're going to be able to do all sorts of different things using just our voices. And these experiments are kind of the road.
Right.
As we can kind of see it like, oh, wow, I never even thought about that. Now that this you know, the APIs open and people are able to make actions and, you know, who knows what kind of stuff we're going to be doing and seeing in the next upcoming months. And so this is a place that you can kind of find some of those cutting edge things.
Yeah. And to expand on that, the experiments with Google has been around for quite some time. We did an article on it. I don't know. It's been over a year ago. And that is where a lot of these newer web-based technologies come from, because they open these to third-party developers and they can play around with it and see what they can do with it. And a lot of the end user stuff that we see now came from stuff like this, and, and you never really realize it, but it's cool because you can go there and play around with a lot of really neat stuff.
So if you go to that experimentswithgoogle.com, so experimentswithgoogle.com, there's actually, like he said, there's quite a few things. And one of the first ones was that was Chrome experiments. Like, and so there are literally pages of Chrome experiments, and they're really fun to play with.
It's fun to just go in there and mess around with those.
The lightsaber battle was an experiment. Yeah, that was really, really probably the most popular.
I'm not sure if it's still active or not, but it's
I don't know.
Really,
they should turn that back on with a new movie coming out, right?
So, worth checking to see, dig around. And see if that's in there, because you would use your phone. You paired your phone with your Chromebook, and your phone controlled the lightsaber on the screen.
Your phone became a lightsaber.
Really, 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 really amazing how it worked, because it was it's using WebGL, right?
So WebGL was powering the 3D graphics, and then I don't remember what the exact communication was with the phone.
Between the phone,
It might have been NFC or Bluetooth. I can't remember, honestly. Yeah, it'd be worth looking up maybe and just putting that back out for the Star Wars movie that's coming out.
So. Yeah, definitely. So speaking of new things, we've got Amazon Music now with some Chromecast support.
Yeah, which was really kind of a surprise. Amazon and Google, obviously two giants who, not that there's really any bad blood between them, but they haven't been known to play well in the past. And you know, certain Google products can't be found on Amazon because they're in direct competition with Echo, Alexa, and all of that. And, you can't buy a Google Home on Amazon. You can't buy Chromecast on Amazon. And back in 2015, I think, was when the Chromecast was removed. And Amazon's apps, music and Prime Movies, has never supported Chromecast. And just out of the blue, a couple of weeks ago, the music app has now added Chromecast support. So if you have it and you've gotten an update, if you open it, you'll see the Chromecast button right there in the top corner. And not really sure, there was no announcement from the company. Not sure what the play behind that was, but hopefully it's just a matter of Amazon embracing the fact that there are 60 million Chromecasts out there in the wild, and that it'd be kind of silly to not support that in their applications. Really would like to see it come to the Prime Movies app.
Hopefully that's like it is a harbinger of things to come, because if you think about it, what is the new service? Movies Anywhere.
Movies Anywhere, yes.
So Movies Anywhere, if you haven't checked into this, Google it. Look up Movies Anywhere. It's really awesome. Disney has basically leveraged their strong arm over the industry. And if you were a Disney Movies Anywhere user before, you're familiar with this. Disney has basically leveraged and said, hey, look, we're going to make a service that if you purchase a movie in one place, you have it in all places. And so, interestingly enough, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Disney Movies, obviously.
Vudu.
So, I mean, I don't know where else you buy movies. To be completely honest, I'm not sure where else you would go. I'm sure there are other services, but I've never purchased a movie outside of those five services. All of them work with Movies Anywhere. And so once you create your account and you sign all the five pieces in, the things you've owned on any of those services are now available across all of those services. And so I'm wondering if some of this is not Amazon kind of getting strong-armed into some of this stuff, too.
Yeah, some synergy here of them hopefully working together.
Right. I mean, I don't understand at all, and maybe I'm ignorant a little bit, of the hardware versus software content. But it seems like to me Amazon does everything they can to pull you into their ecosystem to sell you content. So they want to sell you music. They want to sell you streaming. They want to sell you Prime Movies and their content, right? They want to rope you in so that you buy content from them and not from someone else, hence why they don't, you know, sell Chromecast and stuff like that. But if there are people who like Amazon and want to buy stuff from Amazon, but really like the simplicity of Chromecast. I know a couple people specifically right now that come to mind that are like that, that have a lot of stuff that they purchased from Amazon and are considering purchasing stuff elsewhere because, well, Amazon doesn't play nice with this now, right. So I guess I'll purchase my stuff elsewhere.
Right.
Why in the world wouldn't you not make Amazon Prime Movies and everything you have work with a Chromecast? Because in the end, I'm pretty much under the assumption that the operation is we want to sell you content, or else nobody would do this.
Like, absolutely.
Why would Apple and Google and Amazon all be working to have their own content stores if not for this reason? It cannot be hardware, because look at the stuff Amazon sells to run their video on. Look at the Fire Sticks and the Fires and the tablets. They sell those, I guarantee you, even maybe at a loss sometimes. I mean, right now the 10-inch Fire is $99.
Yeah.
Guarantee that's probably right at or maybe a loss every time they sell one of those. So clearly, the margins are not good enough in the hardware. So they're selling hardware at a loss in order to get you to purchase licensed movies and music from them. So if that's the play, and like you said, there's millions upon millions of Chromecasts in the wild, why wouldn't you want to tap into that market too and say, hey, if you got a Chromecast, great, you can buy your stuff at Amazon and we'll gladly do this. And there's all these people that are Prime members anyway, so why wouldn't you want to do this? It makes no sense to me. So hopefully, like I said, it's a harbinger of things to come that eventually we're going to see. Because I think that's the last holdout, really. Well, obviously, Apple. I don't expect to jump on iTunes and play a movie and be able to Chromecast it. Apple will never do that. If they do, then you know, hell might have frozen over. But it's just never going to happen. But everyone else, I expect to eventually play nice with Chromecast.
Yeah. So switching gears, and this is one of the last things I want to talk about today, is Robbie, you know, recently you were experimenting, let's say.
That's a good word.
Let's call it experimenting. You were experimenting with some Windows, a Windows device, mm-hmm. As a means to get some work done.
Sure.
We both work for a marketing firm, and there were some things that you wanted to try to get done, and you thought maybe, hey, I'm going to try this Windows device. Maybe this will be, you know, a solution. I can have this here at work. I'll have it set up at my desk. I can do this. I'll still have my Chromebooks and do all of that. But maybe I need this Windows device to get work done. So what, but what happened?
Being involved in Chrome Unboxed for a while now, part of the reason I got involved in all this to begin with was, you know, I just have a fascination with like tech, and I like to buy stuff and resell it and all that kind of stuff. So some of those habits have never gone away. And so every once in a while, you know, I get tempted to see what's out there and see what's going on. It's been years since I've owned any other device that runs anything other than Chrome OS. So for some reason, I got a hair to try that. And especially for work, there were a couple things in the last month that I've run across where it would have been nice to have had a few different programs that don't natively run right now on Chromebooks. And so one of those was Excel. I had a client send something over. It had a graph embedded in it. And I opened it up in the Excel app on the Pixelbook, and it didn't show the graph. I opened it up in Google Docs. It did not show the graph. I had to send it to another coworker on their Mac for them to pull that graph off there because I needed it. And, you know, after a while, sometimes those things feel like, hey, I'd love to have something for work that, you know, I could get away with, you know, being able to do those types of things. And in Windows in general, you can really Googleify a Windows machine if you work at it. And I worked at it. Yeah, I worked at it for the better part of a day and a half in order to get all my stuff set up. And the first night, there was probably a 3 to 4 hour block of updates that had to happen. And so I just left it alone. I didn't want to mess with it while it was doing its thing. And then the next day, I was, you know, setting up and adding applications and all the things I need to get work done and try to feel comfortable. Because, again, I've been operating in Chrome OS for a while. And so I did get that done, and I got a handful of things accomplished at work the next day with it. And then that evening, I had not purchased, because, you know, they don't have USB-C, and so I had to go purchase a different thing to get it to go to an extended display. And the next thing I know, I went to extend the display, and all kinds of UI things were having problems in Chrome. And so, you know, it just wasn't working. And And so I kind of knew at that moment, like, you know, this probably isn't going to work for me, because that's one step I can't make. Like, I can't get rid of Chrome. Like, for me, I'm way too invested in this ecosystem. It's the way I work. Most of my applications that I work with are all in Chrome. And so, you know, I figured at that point, it was time to probably come back to Chrome OS and forget the whole thing ever happened. But what it did make me realize is how much I enjoy working from a Chromebook and how many things the Chromebook does well. And so I wrote an article about it. You can check it out. It's a long read, so prepare yourself if you're going to sit down and read.
Hunker down for an evening. And
and I'm trying to find it so I can make sure and hit the details of it.
Let's just cut.
Yeah. Because I'm like, where is that? Because I don't want to fumble through this.
Yeah.
Scroll right by it. Okay, so I wrote an article addressing some of this stuff. And again, you can read it if you like. It's lengthy, so hunker down. But in it, I kind of made up this rule. Doesn't exist anywhere, but I called it the 90-10 rule. And basically, if whatever tool you're using to get the job done can handle 90% of the things that you normally do on a day-to-day basis, and there's a 10% part that you can't get done on it, that's acceptable. Like, you can kind of get around that. And for some people, that's going to be 80-20, or heck, it might be even 70-30 for some people. But there's a point where you get to where the hurdles are too much and you have to switch to something else. And so for me, Chromebooks fill that 90-10 rule. Probably 95-5, honestly, for me. Like, I can do almost everything I need to do on a Chromebook. There's just going to be times from here and there where it's just not going to do what I need it to do, and I'm going to have to either use a different operating system or some other solution to get around that. And so, you know, the few things I cover in the article, and again, I would hope that if you're even thinking about switching to Chrome OS, or you're trying to talk to a family member or something, like, here's why it's pretty cool. Because I actually had a family member approach me like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a Chromebook, you know, and I was like, you should go read this article, because I don't want to try to regurgitate all those things. But, you know, the quickness of the updates, like I said, I spent 3 hours waiting on updates. Right. That doesn't happen on Chromebooks. Boot times and setup time, like, just to test it, once I went back to my Pixelbook, it was clean and fresh, and so I had an event to go to deal with some ticket sales at with a ticket system I'd built, and I took the Pixelbook over there with nothing signed in and walked in. I signed in and was able to get work done within 10 minutes. Not possible on a Windows device. So the setup's really quick. Obviously, boot up is crazy fast, and you can turn the device off if you want to, and you're back up and running within seconds. So when those updates do come in, you go, hey, I want to take that update. Sure. If you can click the button, take a drink of your coffee, and you're back working again. Like, the update process is so simple. Then you look at multi-user accounts. So, you know, we have a Chromebook at home. A lot of times we just kind of pass around because we're all signed into it. And if I don't want to get my book bag out of the car, literally it's easier for me to use my wife's Chromebook a lot of times and just sign into my account there than it is to walk out and get my book bag out of the car. It's literally that simple. Across the board, I mean, yeah, we have some wonky trackpads here and there, but overall, trackpads, you don't have to worry about them working the way they should on Chromebooks. On Windows machines, I cannot say that. I mean, that you never know what you're going to get with Windows machines, because you don't know what kind of trackpad and you don't know what kind of drivers it's going to have. Multiple monitors, this was the big thing I ran into with Windows. You know, as I was dragging stuff onto a second monitor, the high DPI to not high DPI, things were out of whack, and it was not usable for what I wanted to do. Never had those issues on Chrome OS, and it just works. And again, it's that 90-10 rule. If for whatever reason, like, you're going, hey, well, I edit video exclusively in Adobe Premiere, and that's what I make my living off of, by all means, no, don't try to switch to Chrome OS. That's not for you. But it may be a great thing for you to have at home. It may be a great thing for you to have, you know, with your kids, that kind of stuff. But there are going to be those people that have those use cases where it just doesn't work. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I know I've talked quite a bit already about this, but, you know, there's just certain scenarios where people, it's not a good fit for you for your job or for your work. But a lot of you listening to this, it might actually be. And sometimes it's just figuring out a different way to compute. You know, Apple has done a really great job. They haven't had a lot of good ads in the last few years, but they have an ad out right now. Have you all seen the new iPad Pro ad?
Yes. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And it speaks a ton to what Chromebooks are about. It basically, if you haven't seen it yet, is a little girl, probably somewhere in New York, one of the boroughs in New York, and it's her day she spends with her iPad Pro. And she's, mm-hmm. Sitting and drawing one time, and then she's dragging and dropping, and she's showing features, and some of those things. But she gets to the end of her day, and she's done all this stuff with her iPad Pro. And she's laying in the grass in her backyard, and her neighbor comes out and says, "Hey, what kind of computer is that?" She looks up at the woman. This is a woman talking to probably, 10, 12-year-old kid. Yeah. She looks up at the woman, and she says, "What's a computer?" And it's about them redefining what it means to compute, to have a computing device, because it is being redefined. It's been being redefined for some time. And Chromebooks play a role in that of, these kids coming up that aren't going to have these attachments to Windows, they're not going to have attachments to Apple or anything else. They're probably going to have attachments to Chrome OS, and some of them are going to hate it, and that's fine. They're, we grew up and I kind of hated Windows.
Yeah.
But I knew I had to use it, and I knew how to use it. When push came to shove and I needed to use something, I went to a Windows device because I knew it. And kids are going to know Chromebooks.
Yes.
They're going to grow up, and that's what they're going to use.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that may be a big part of the push that we're seeing to make Chrome OS work with other applications and other platforms, mm-hmm. because up until this point there hasn't been that much of a necessity, but with over 50% of the education market, and as you said, kids growing up now, is this being their native operating system, developers and other software companies are going to have to make adjustments for that. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to. It's not going to be a choice, because we talked the other day, These kids are going to go to college, they're going to get out of college, they're going to get in positions where they are making decisions for hardware purchases, and they're going to want to buy Chromebooks. So they're going to need Chromebooks that will be able to leverage, whether it's things like Crossover or VMware or things like that. So that's a big deal, and I think that's accelerating the move for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast, along with tons of other info covered in this episode. Additionally, you can find us online on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ by searching @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.